introduce myself again briefly. I'm Francesca Lobasso. I'm the new director of organizing with Healthcare Now. I'm super, super excited about this call. And just a brief little explanation. So Jeff and I at the national office have been talking, since the national conference in January, even before that, just about how many amazing people that we've met in this movement and all of the amazing things going on, but how hard it is sometimes to be able to share them. And so, the strategy conference for the people who are able to attend was such a great way of, sharing ideas and being able to have conversations with people. And so what we really want to do is find new tools to use to connect people across the country and help people share best practices and just, the knowledge they have, like, from what they've done and their experiences. And so we really are really excited to try and find new outlets for that, to help, to help build new leaders and really showcase the amazing leaders that we have. So we came up with this idea for this new kind of call. We're currently calling skill building calls, which, with obviously the idea of it being a way to really just highlight some of the amazing work that's happening and helping someone, share that knowledge. So this first one is with Kimberly Hunter in Gainesville, Florida, who works for the Alachua County Labor Party, and she is the facilitator, so she's the one you heard speaking, and she's an organizer with them and has did an amazing speak out recently in Gainesville with her organization, and we just think it's a really useful tool, and I'm really excited to hear her share her thoughts. They've been doing some amazing stuff there. And we also have Jennifer Blackburn on the call, who's with Occupy Portland, who created this event called Lights on Healthcare, which is a teach-in format. The reason we put these things together is because they're very similar in terms of basically their structure.
Excuse me. We cannot hear you. It's not clear at all. You're talking too fast. And, if you can speak up a little bit so we can all hear what you're talking about, I really appreciate it.
Sure. Is this better? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So I might have a bad reception, so I apologize for that. But basically, I was just introducing Jennifer Blackburn, who's with Occupy Portland, who'll be talking about this teach-in that she helped create called Lights on Healthcare, and Kimberly Hunter, who is facilitating, who is an organizer with the Alachua County Labor Party. And in terms of, and just for anyone who just joined the call, there will be a recording of this call, will be emailed on Friday, probably, within a few days. So so you don't have to worry about taking notes if you want to make sure you're more present. The recording will be sent out along with a handout going over all of the major themes discussed on this call. The call should be about an hour long, with 30 minutes in the beginning of Kimberly and Jennifer sharing their thoughts, with a half an hour for Q&A. But both Jennifer and I can stay on after that hour if people have more questions and want to continue the conversation, we're happy to do that. So we wanted to make sure to have that flexibility. And then the one last thing, if anybody needs to mute or, if there's background noise, you can press *4 to mute yourself and then *4 again to unmute yourself. So I'm going to hand it back over to Kimberly. Thank you.
Thanks. So we organized here in Gainesville a speak out on healthcare, and we did it in conjunction with our local Occupy Gainesville, and we called it healthcare for the 99%. And kind of how we defined what a speak out is and the purpose of it is it's usually a public event where people share their personal healthcare stories. Usually we try for stories more than an opinion, to just kind of level just people can relate to that better. But usually we focus on stories that expose the horrors of the healthcare system, and that helps bring that out and kind of identify the problem. And that can also bring new people there, who are coming just to learn about it, can bring them into the movement, and it can also influence public officials if you invite them to be a part of that process to hear people sharing. And I wanted to just pause before I go into exactly how and why we planned it to let Jennifer maybe say in a few sentences the difference between the teach-in she's going to talk about and the speak-out that I just described.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I think the difference for the teach-in was more specifically organized, and three speakers were discussed before the event, and there was a bit of a curriculum and resources there. And it was at a coffee shop, so it was very organized, but yet free-flowing and not really an opinion piece, but we did have a Q&A, which helped start conversations and kind of developing a sense for what our crowd is that's coming to these teach-ins. And it lasted almost 3 hours, so it was a pretty long event. And that's kind of just an overview. We wanted to make sure that in the beginning there was just some brief education and then kind of a personal kind of take from someone that lived in Taiwan, and then afterwards a Q&A, and it worked out really well.
Thanks, Jennifer. And I'm just going to kind of share the details of how we planned and why we planned our speak out, and then after that, Jennifer will have a more extended period to go into in depth to the teach-in that she organized. So I first want to start with why, like the reason that we held the speak out. And when we were thinking about the event, we had four goals in mind as an organization: networking in the community, as far as outreach, and also internally, as far as strengthening our membership in our organization. And the first goal was to really support the local Occupy movement. We were really excited to have that in our city, and we wanted to invite our members to come down and experience that and be a part of it. So that was the reason for partnering directly with Occupy. And as I share each goal, I'm just going to tell you kind of what happened, like whether or not we met that goal. One thing we incorporated into the event to really have like a genuine partnership with Occupy in that is that we collected donations, like we passed the basket, and we explained before we did that all of those donations would go to the Occupy movement, and we ended up collecting over $100 there. And we went down to the plaza that they were occupying and held it outside rather than having it in a library or anything like that. So we were very much the guests of Occupy in their space. And the second goal that we had was to explore what kind of short or long-term partnership we could have beyond this event between our organization, the Labor Party, and Occupy Gainesville. And kind of what we determined after that event is just, for us, the answer has been not a direct partnership, but we try to maintain lines of communication and support their events when we can, especially their healthcare-related ones. But we have a really limited staff, and we just couldn't fulfill our organizational responsibilities and be at General Assemblies every night to have a kind of like everyday interaction with them. But we often see them in the community, and some of the Labor Party members do frequent the plaza and sometimes staff the Occupy Gainesville table. And the third goal that we had was, and we're going into the internal goals now, was to draw new people into our Just Healthcare campaign that we have with the Labor Party. Just Healthcare is what, it's the HR 676 single payer bill, but that's the term that we use, is Just Healthcare. And that's why the speak out was specifically focused on healthcare and not a broader topic like the corporate influence of everything or something like that. And the result of, having that clear focus on healthcare was that we did reach a lot of new ears. There were probably 50 to 70 people over the course of the event that came, and three people who were there joined our organization, and to do that you have to give $20 a year, so it's somewhat of a commitment. And then also two people later on, who that was our first interaction with them at that speak out, joined what we call the Committee of 100, which is our base of financial supporters that donate monthly to keep our office open and our staff paid. And the final goal that we had was to build new leaders within our movement, either by asking, you know, people who used to be active and are now, you know, have kind of faded into the background, or by asking members that have recently joined the organization to take on some sort of responsibility in organizing that event, whether it's, you know, putting up flyers around town or, you know, taking kind of a bolder step and saying, yes, I'll share my story at the Speak Out. And we sort of kind of handpicked a few people to ask for two reasons. Like one time, you know, we picked, maybe we're just trying to develop that person as a leader, and then other times we picked just because we knew that person had a particularly compelling story that would help frame the message in a way that would be well received. So those are the goals that we went into organizing the event for. And then now I want to go into how we set up the event, and so that incorporates the preparation for it as well as how we actually ran the event on the day itself and how we followed up with it. And through all of that process, we tried to keep those four goals that I just mentioned in mind. And everything we did, we tried to be purposeful in taking a step forward towards one of those goals. So the first part in the preparation, you know, we actually met with Occupy, and we also worked on, you know, media releases and getting flyers around town and also recruiting speakers, which I kind of touched on. So the first part about meeting with Occupy is that we committed as an organization and as the people, like the leaders or the board, to attend a general assembly at least two times a week between all of us. And at first we just went there to listen and to really learn about the local issues that were being brought up at Occupy Gainesville. And then after our second or third meeting, we shared, you know, who we were and how we felt that the Labor Party's just healthcare goals overlapped with Occupy's goals, especially the corporate manipulation of health industry and how that harms common people, just or most people, the 99% it harms us. And then we kind of explored and asked if they would be interested in hosting a healthcare-related speak out. And the reason we asked about a speak out is because this is something that had worked for us in the past as an organization, and it's something that our Occupy movement here was using a lot as a tool already, and they were familiar with it, comfortable with it, and they had also used it successfully, so we felt they might feel positive about doing one connected to healthcare. And they did agree to do that, and so we went forward and planning it together. And so the second part of preparation was press work. You know, we designed a bright-colored flyer that said healthcare for the 99% and used the Occupy Gainesville logo to kind of, you know, turn different kinds of eyes. You know, people who are interested in Occupy and also healthcare would look at that same flyer. And we distributed copies to our members to put up where they go grocery shopping, at the libraries, around town. On Gainesville is a college town, so also on the campuses where they teach, et cetera. And we also made sure to give a stack to Occupy Gainesville, and they were really, really helpful with putting up flyers around town, and they always gave them to people when they stopped to visit the table. And then as it got closer to the event, we had a press release, just kind of a standard one that we sent out to the media and also posted online on Facebook and our website and got the word out. And I just wanted to give you a couple of things that I try to do when I contact media. Sometimes it's hard to really hook them on a story, especially newspapers when they're, you know, have a smaller and smaller staff every month, it seems like, and more stories to cover than they have time. So three things that I try to do when talking to media is when I send on the press release, if it's a reporter that I've interacted with before, I try to put like a three-sentence personal note at the top of the email addressing them personally and referring back to something they've covered for us. And the second thing is I always, always follow up those emails with a phone call to the office, usually that same day or the day after, and I just say I'm calling to confirm you received the press release, and then it gets the conversation started to see if they're interested. And one thing that sometimes works is to let them know that if they cover it, that you'd really like to be able to post it on your website and share it with your membership because they like to get that out and click on it and share with people. And sometimes that gets reporters thinking, oh, that's great, this would be a good story. My boss will like that if my story gets a lot of clicks. And so they might be more apt to cover it even if they are choosing from a multitude of options. And so, and the last thing we did in preparation, I kind of already touched on, which was recruiting speakers. And again, we had two goals with that. One was to recruit new members or inactive members to, you know, to kind of take a new step in sharing their story and get them involved. And the second one was to really seek out people who we knew we had heard share in the past or talked to in conversation and knew they had a really compelling story about problems with insurance that could help frame the message and that could kind of kick off that speak out in the direction they wanted it to go. So the second section is about the actual event itself, like what happened that day and how did we attract attention and how did we keep it running smoothly so, you know, someone didn't talk for 30 minutes and people would start leaving. So the first part is just as far as with the display, Occupy brought some decorations and we also brought a big banner that we made with the same logo that's on the Single Payer Now and Healthcare Now t-shirts that says healthcare yes, insurance companies no. And we kind of put that in front of where people were standing. And then we also had our, you know, regular newsletter, our brochure on single payer, and t-shirts and things like that on a table. And then we made sure to have, since it was on a plaza, there wasn't a lot of seating, so you have to think about that. And it was a hot day, and we were expecting a lot of people, like over the age of 50, to come. And so we wanted to make sure we have chairs and things for people to sit comfortably. So we set up about 30 chairs. And some people, everyone who needed a chair was able to get one, and other people who are comfortable sitting on the ground could do that. And then sound, we're not actually allowed to use a microphone in our city unless you pay, like, this expensive rental fee to use the plaza. So we thought about using the human mic since we were co-hosting this with Occupy, but decided against it just because then we would only have time for about half of the stories, because when you use the human mic, it takes about twice as long. And so we went ahead and just brought a bullhorn and used that if for people who were quiet or if people said they couldn't hear. And then we had a time limit that we strictly enforced because I don't know if you run into this in your organizations, but there are some people who once they start talking, it's really hard to get them to stop, and they're saying good things, but they can get off topic. So how do you rein them back in politely without the event you know, going on and on and on. And so what we used like a red light, a yellow light, red light method where we had a yellow circle and a red circle. And when the speaker had 30 seconds left in this time limit, we would hold up the yellow circle. And then when that time was used up, we would hold up the red circle. And we didn't have any, you know, there was a couple of people that went maybe 10 seconds over, but that was really effective. They really respected that process. And then again, with the we thought about for the introduction and the focus, we designated someone from our organization to briefly just introduce the speak out and explain why we were on the plaza and why this was a partnership between the Labor Party and Occupy to bring this. And then they briefly talked about the problem of insurance companies and preventing access to quality, affordable care. And then we compared that to single payer. And went over the guidelines of the speak out, which is, you know, the time limit, and if halfway through the event, we'll pass around the donation basket and the sign up sheet. And then we opened the floor. But we kept a stack of speakers. You know, we said, you know, if you would like to speak, come up here and let us know, and we'll put your name on the list. And we kind of had already, you know, handpicked a few people to get that started, as I shared, to sort of frame the message from the beginning and get it going in a useful direction. And the final part of the what I want to share with you about that event is how we followed up with it. Because we didn't just end the speak out and say, thanks for coming, everyone can go home, and maybe one day we'll get single payer. But we invited them to actually follow up right there on the spot. And we did that through when the last person was done sharing. We did thank people for attending, and we said, you know, if you need to go, you can go. But if you're interested in what's next, what now, and you'd like to help spread this message to other people, in 10 minutes we'll have a 15-minute discussion in a circle right over here about, you know, where we're going to go next with this and now what can we do with all these stories that we just heard. And what we did in that circle was we made sure to set a time for the, for another meeting so those people could come back, and we distributed tools that would help people share single payer with people they knew, and we also tried to make sure that we matched people with a task, that they said, yes, I will research this, or yes, I will bring something to the next meeting, to hook them into coming to another meeting. So, yeah, we had about 20 people who came to that now what's next circle, and I was really surprised. I kind of thought it being an event that was partnered with Occupy that people would say, you know, what we need to do next is go and picket an insurance company or have some sort of very public demonstration. But to my surprise, every single person in the circle said, no, what we need to focus on is building our base through grassroots educating about healthcare systems. And people shared ideas about possibly opening the message to people in groups that they had connections with. And so we wrote down as people were talking, you know, what everyone said, the ideas they shared. I had a clipboard, and I just put the person's name, what they said. And if they said, oh, I have a connection with this group, I wrote that down. And so then what we asked people to do was, if, you know, for the next meeting, if they could come back with the meeting place and the time for those other groups that they identified. And for other people, if they asked, you know, a question like, what does, you know, they wanted to talk about the Affordable Care Act, and they had some questions about that, like what do insurance companies cover, or what would it be like? Someone asked a really interesting question about what it would look like to have group insurance, because some people have group insurance now, like through their workplace or whatever. Like, what would it be like that to have like a community group insurance? And we said, you know, we didn't have the answer, but we said, you know, it's an interesting idea. So could you research that and bring it back to us and how that would work under the Affordable Care Act? So whatever people were naturally interested in, we said, you know, we affirmed that. Like, yeah, that's really interesting and that's important. Could you find out a little bit more about that and share it with us at the next event? And so that's kind of how we hooked them into coming to the next meeting. And we decided on the speak out was on a Saturday, and we met on the following Saturday, right after another event that Occupy was having. They were actually picketing corporate pharmacies in favor of locally owned pharmacies. And, you know, we went out and encouraged our membership to go to that picket, and then right afterwards we had this kind of next steps in the single payer campaign meeting in our office. And I'd say at least half of the people who were at that original meeting came to the second one, and two of those people who were in the original, that round circle right after the speak out, are the ones who joined our financial base of supporters. So that was a really important, probably one of the most important things we did in the speak out, was that follow-up discussion. And the final thing before I turn it over to Jennifer is, you know, after the speak out, we wanted to keep that story going as long as possible, and we have a newsletter that we send out quarterly. And so in preparation for that, you know, I contacted the people who had shared and asked them to get involved again by sending me, you know, a transcript of what they have shared or a summary, and asked if they would be okay with that being featured in the newsletter, and put that with a picture of them sharing at the speak out. And so just kind of a further way to get those people involved and make them feel good and affirm what they had done, but also to spread that message further and the excitement further to our members who weren't able to attend. Okay, that was a lot of information. And after Jennifer shares about her teach-in, then we'll have a time for Q&A. So write your questions down, and we'll have time to get to them. Okay, Jennifer, if you want to share about yours.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Julia. Definitely a lot of things that you incorporated in your speak out, very similar things that we did. I'm realizing the difference might perhaps be the weather here in Portland. It's constantly raining, and indoors seems to be where we do the best work right now. Let's see. When I first started
Jennifer?
Getting involved. Yes.
I'm sorry. I've been listening, and the whole time I think there's somebody who's not muted because there's been background noise. It sounds like background noise. I wonder if you could take this time to ask them to star 4 okay. For anybody. I don't know who it is. I didn't even know if it was me. I think I'm, I obviously I was not muted just now, and I wasn't sure if I was or not. So
okay.
When I get off, I will mute myself. But I wondered
okay.
if
I can ask. We just wanted to make sure that everybody had pressed *4 on their phone because there's some background noise. Can everybody make sure that they've done that?
It kind of sounds like washing dishes, if that's a clue.
Okay. Is anybody washing dishes or so after dinner time, perhaps? I can hear something a little bit. If anyone wants to test it, they can say something.
Hello? Hello?
I can hear you.
You can?
Yes,
I pressed *4. I'll do it again.
Okay.
I'm not making any noise. I'm just sitting quietly. I'm going to press *4 again.
Okay. Well, I hope it's not my phone either. Sometimes cell phones. Can we go forward and then let me know if you're still having problems? So for me, in our community, I just noticed that so many people didn't know what single payer was. And this was kind of before the Occupy movement. So the direction that I wanted to go was creating a group that met monthly that could not only be educated, but then educate each other through our knowledge, you know, and our questions, things that we're exposed to. So a lot of doctors and other members of committees were like, well, we just want people to be ready for lobby day. And to me, it was just a no-brainer that education is the only way that we're going to create advocacy and more activists. So in going to a number of teach-ins and speak-outs, which I'm sure you've all been there, I just highlighted the main points that were very impactful for me and, like, the top 5 to 10 questions that I get on a regular basis. So in networking over the last year, I've been able to team up with PNHP members and the Mattitel doctors, which are located primarily in Corvallis, and then through marches and Occupy and various, like Vermont coming to town, we started meeting more people with stories and the people that could share at these events. So I had already established kind of this Lights On Healthcare group, and it mostly was just going to be a name for an event so that the poster had an image. And a personal thing for me to get people in, since I wanted to take this on the road, let's say, like when I go to my hometown of Boise, Idaho, I didn't really want it to be associated with any group or coalition that already existed for various reasons, whether it be a union group or any kind of affiliation with a party or whatever. So anyhow, we got kind of a logo and an image, and it was so much easier to create flyers that kind of looked the same and made sure that the speakers had an agenda. And we met before the teach-in. We planned it a month in advance to be at a coffee shop that also served beer and wine. And it kind of shut down the music. I'm kind of jumping ahead. Before the teach-in, we met about 2 weeks before, and we planned what we thought a good teach-in would be like. Mine was more structured, and everybody else's was a little bit more like, okay, feel it out, see how it goes. So we ended up melding the two, and there was an agenda, and there were topics to cover in the beginning. Paul Gorman started. One thing we definitely forgot, which I'll mention, is we did forget to give a definition of single payer. So we discussed universal health care and all these aspects, but that was actually not covered, but I mean, it was in our flyer. So we started by, you know, I had a team of about 7 people now that were really interested, which is now fusing into kind of our outreach committee for Jobs with Justice, is going to be kind of this format. And so each person kind of took a job. One person was in charge of coming up with PowerPoint slides that might be necessary. One person created the comment cards to the end. We all, someone purchased pins, someone that said healthcare is a human right, someone brought up, you know, various items. So everybody had a job. So it was a team effort, and which is great because in it, you know, trying to hold a teach-in and get everything done, you always forget something. So definitely go in there with the team. And it was just really successful. I just said hello and why this event was going on. And most people, I think, were there, were in between the age of 21 and 32. And the only source of media that I used or promoting was a Facebook event page. I did make a flyer, an 8x10 and a smaller one, and handed those out. But I think more so it was the Facebook page event that brought people in. And the verbiage, perhaps, that was used was powerful. If anyone wants to hear that, I have our opening line for the event. And that was also used on our event page. You know, it really was about 20 minutes of Dr. Paul Gorman talking about his experience as a doctor and our healthcare system and why it was broken. And then it went over to Eric, who had an experience in Taiwan, which is a country with single payer. And that was amazing. The highlight from the comment cards on Eric's discussion was definitely about entrepreneurship. So I really recommend reading about small businesses and countries that have universal health care and how beneficial those countries, how positive they are for small businesses. That was a big one. All in all, it went really good. There really wasn't any side talk. People were really into it. People really do want to learn, and it's important to invite some guests that might know some subjects that will stand up and speak up if they can answer a question that somebody else can't. It's good to have those folks there, not taking over by any means, but definitely adding to the group. And I think we didn't even have to use the slides. We shut off the slide projector. That wasn't necessary. I would recommend maybe having some charts on paper, like the Healthcare Now pamphlet has, to use. It's not everybody wants to get up and speak, so you definitely find those people. And then in the end, you realize there's, you know, so many people that are very busy that they can help out in different ways. Organizing might not be it, but my main goal was to get people's email addresses so that when events did come up, these people are informed, and when our new coalition starts here in Oregon, that, you know, we're already tallying. Now I have 65 email addresses from various events. We get together on the first Sunday of every month. And so I'm looking forward to planning more events of different styles and using the same template, Lights on Healthcare. Some people might not make this month, but they might be able to make next month. And I think that consistency is good for me and our members, our speakers, and volunteers, and then, of course, the community as well.
Thanks, Jennifer.
So, go
ahead. Sorry, did you have more to share? Jennifer? Did we lose her?
Oh, maybe.
Was she on a cell phone?
I think so.
Are
maybe
you
she'll call, try to call back in.
Hello?
Hey.
Oh, my phone does that a lot. So, to wrap it up, the comment cards, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep.
The comment cards were my favorite. We got everybody's email addresses. Almost everybody wanted to be on a committee or know about committee meetings. Lots of great feedback, lots of energy. People wanted to know how to get involved and what action items were to come. So it was very successful, and I was very excited to get that accomplished, and so was our team. And PNHP is now on the monthly newsletter, I think, in Oregon, is going to be adding to their newsletter our teach-ins and locations and dates. So that's really neat. A lot of people just want to get together and hear people talk about this subject because it's so complex. We're constantly learning. I'm still learning. And when Lobby Day comes around, I'm going to be a lot better advocate. And when talking to my family members and people on the street. So teach-ins are definitely my number one goal here in Oregon. And that's all I've got for sharing.
That's great. Thank you, Jennifer. Now I just want to open it up for questions. When you have your question, if you could just remind us who you are, of your name and the state you're calling from, and then share your question. And I'm going to kind of wave to Jennifer and let her answer first if it applies to what she's been doing, and then fill in if there's anything extra I have that I feel like applies to your question. And I understand Francesca also has a few questions already lined up from folks who emailed them in. So first question. I'm going to break the ice.
This is Francesca, with Healthcare Now, and so I'm happy to get it started because I've been looking at a couple of these questions, and I'm excited to hear your response. So one thing that I saw a couple of times was people were asking about language, first in regards to promoting the event, and if there was any particular language that either of you used in your flyers and in your Facebook posts and things like that that you think was most encouraging or, would be most useful in getting people involved and engaged?
Yeah, I can answer that. I actually have the small paragraph right here that I used when I was sending emails about the event, and then the Facebook event page, this was the description. And I can also email that to you, Francesca. And Dr. Paul Gorman is who came up with it, and we made him also repeat it at the beginning of the event when he spoke. He said, three generations ago, it was acceptable that women couldn't vote. Two generations ago, it was acceptable that people were divided on a bus by the color of their skin. Today, in the U.S., it is acceptable that the lack of insurance leads to 45,000 unnecessary deaths each year, and that 60% of all bankruptcies that are filed are due to the inability to pay outrageous medical bills. Today, the U.S. is the only industrialized nation that does not have a universal healthcare system. Bring your questions to this teach-in or just listen to Dr. Paul Gorman and guests discuss healthcare in the U.S. and in other nations.
That's really powerful.
In terms of our speak out, we didn't, because we wanted to hear people's experiences first, we didn't actually put single-payer health care. We didn't even put HR 676 on the flyer. We really tried to emphasize the connection with Occupy and the connection with corporate insurance preventing us from getting the health care we need and also from getting the health care our doctors want us to have. So we just put, we are the 99% healthcare speak out and had the heading, like, let's get Wall Street out of our healthcare for people, not profit. And then we suggested things people could testify about, including insurance companies interfering in their care, being denied or putting off care, struggling to pay, or not having health insurance at all, and worrying about keeping insurance for their family and not wanting to switch jobs because of that. Not being able to see the doctor of their choice and all the paperwork that's involved. So we just kind of put those points on there to get people thinking about their own experiences because probably most people have had one, if not more, of those experiences with healthcare.
Thank you. That makes so much sense, especially sort of like highlighting the difference there, as both of you did in terms of, with the teach-in where it's, couched in this very educational format. It makes a lot of sense that you're using a really powerful message that is highlighting the problem. And then in the speak out, it's where you're trying to get people to engage with the problem. And so you want people to come to that themselves. So I really appreciate that. You guys really helped focus that. So thank you. That's wonderful.
Can I share two things kind of on that same topic. in promoting, we did like this word puzzle, and in the word puzzle were circled the words healthcare is your human right, and then under it said it's no puzzle, and then it said universal healthcare teach-in, come learn about it. And it was just very energetic, and I think that's why we got kind of a younger crowd. It might not work for everybody. One of our speak outs to add, Kimberly's doing something very similar with the personal stories that we've called Mad as Hell Minutes. And we had probably at a march that was turned into a speak out, we had about 30 people that did a Mad as Hell Minute in front of 500 people. And it took a while, but we called those Mad as Hell Minutes during our speak out.
Cool. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Hello, can I be heard?
Yes.
This is Marilyn Schramm. I'm in Austin, Texas. And I just want to say kudos to both ladies that just gave their presentations. Great efforts and great stories for sharing with us about things we can do. All I didn't understand was where did the second teach-in take place? I heard about the Occupy connection, but the second one was in Oregon, and where did that teach-in take place?
The teach-in took place in a coffee shop. Is that kind of what you mean, in Portland, Oregon?
Yeah, I didn't know where it took place and, like, what kind of how many people showed up or what kind
of... Okay. Yes. It was right here in Portland. We have kind of four districts. We're going to start with Northeast Portland. Hopefully our next venue will be in Southeast Portland. And there were about 35 people that were there. And the teach-in took about 2 hours, and everybody stayed for about 3 hours. The coffee shop was open until 10, and it was a very inviting atmosphere with, like, a bar and food. Everybody had seats, and almost everybody had a table or a couch or, like, a coffee table. So it was very relaxed, easy to hang out in settings.
Well, great job. Kudos to both of you. Thank you so much for sharing this.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Marilyn.
This is Margie in Atlanta, Georgia. And I would like to make some comments about what's going on here. We have the latest bill in the Georgia legislature is 469, and it is against any kind of public speaking. And we will be arrested if we speak out in places, so we're managing to be at those places, but we can't do any speaking and demonstrating, or we will be arrested. This is just, it's fantastic what has happened here in Georgia.
Just find yourself a lawyer. That's against the First Amendment.
I know it is,
yeah.
And we're well aware of that.
Yeah, I have something to say about that. When I first started getting involved, my level of activism was nothing really, and I was starting to learn so much. And the reason that I started using the word teach-in was because I was hearing about these teach-ins that took place during the Vietnam War and the opposition, where people would meet at, you know, in a basement somewhere or a coffee shop, and it was very kind of underground. And I think that that's, you know, I don't want to think that we're going to be pushed to that, but if speak outs and outward things aren't going to work, we can always still get together, and I'll definitely help expose that information with an Occupy. I can't believe that's happening. I can't imagine that a law would get passed. They're trying to do that in Idaho as well, and this is very serious to our movement and to spreading the word. I plan on continuing to hold events like musical events and then messaging at all of them and building a movement. I realize that we might not always get to go to a courthouse and speak out, but that's just one take I have about teach-ins.
Well, this is really a bizarre situation here. We have been demonstrating at foreclosures, and were stopped there from doing any leafleting, except on the curb. We couldn't be up close at all. They have reorganized the legislature, and they are combining districts, so some of the most active representatives of ours are now combined in a district where they are opponents of close friends of theirs who were in the neighboring district, and so they're dropping out of the legislature so that the person who is their friend can stay in at that position, and they're going in, you know, leaving the legislature. So we're losing some of our best people there. And I mean, it's just bizarre what is going on. It's totally against the Constitution, but they're bullying their way ahead at this point. So anyway, we're still in there, and Healthcare Now and Occupy are very much involved in this, but there are a whole bunch of other organizations as well. So it's we haven't stopped yet, but it's like a police state here in Atlanta. It's unbelievable.
Wow.
Takes me right back to the civil rights movement, you know, it's just, except it's against all the people who are working for the betterment of the people in the area, in Atlanta.
Wow.
Hello, this is Joe. Am I muted still?
Nope, we can hear you, Joe.
Oh, good. I'd like to make a comment about that. I have had similar experience, but only in doing a protest about an environmental concern. You're an active ACLU in your state of Georgia, because it would be important to notify them that this is happening. If they can't do anything about it, and they may try, but at least they can document that it's happening, because it's the number of incidents can maybe build a case. So if
so, you're saying ACLU, is that what you're saying?
ACLU, yeah, I notify the state at ACLU. Because when they get enough cases like this, I mean, they need to know that this is going on. Every one of your experiences, they really should know about. I've been a member of ACLU for a very long time, and they will defend everybody on the right and on the left and the center when it comes to your constitutional rights. So,
yeah. And we have been in touch with them here. I know the people who are with ACLU here, too, and... you know, I haven't heard anything that's coming out of this yet, but I mean, it's absolutely against the Constitution, you know. I mean,
thank you so much, Margie, for sharing.
Yeah,
that. I mean, it's crazy that that's happening. But I actually, this is Francesca again, sorry. I had another question that I wanted to just throw in there that someone had emailed to me about who had, you know, held a similar event and, you know, to, like, a teach-in or speak-out format, and they said something that they kept coming across is that, you know, people were sharing their stories or talking about the benefits of single payer, and, you know, they would get comments from people that, you know, sort of, and I'm sure others have heard this before, oh, there's people abusing the system, you know, I know this person on Medicare or Medicaid who, you know, is getting disability, and, you know, I see them out mowing their lawn and blah, 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 and I don't want to put in money into this, you know, corrupt system, and this is, you know, sort of a, you know, an issue that they encounter, and they were, when this person was wondering if anybody can speak to ways that they've been able to respond to that or ways to address that kind of issue in either of these formats.
In terms of a speak out, I don't think I've ever had a question like that at a speak out, because people are usually talking about the problem rather than the solution, and then we just kind of briefly mention the solution and how it would work. I mean, I'll let Jennifer share if that's come up at a teach-in. I mean, I've had that come up in conversation before, but not at a speak out specifically.
Yeah, teach-ins, definitely those have come up less at the teach-ins that I've had and more so the teach-ins that the MatisHall doctors have had. And when I hear that, I just kind of, it makes me think about how we've caused people in our society to behave because of healthcare. It's almost as though we're like desperate for it. We're fighting for it. We're trying to get as much as we can because we're just scared we're not going to have it. And people are almost angry. And you don't see one thing that I'd like to do with Eric from Taiwan or this new gal that spent time in Canada, and I would love to share this information with you guys if I find it, is that a problem? Do people discuss that in other countries with universal health care? And I really don't think that it is. There aren't really people going, oh, they're abusing Medicare and taking up these services, and they're, you know, there's words from the slang words for this, and it just, I just don't think that they have that problem because people aren't desperate for it and fighting for it. And with profit healthcare system, we've created that kind of behavior. So to me, I guess I take more of a compassionate role than a factual role. If I had one of the doctors with me right now, they'd probably give me some sort of fact. And I, mm-hmm. you know, I don't personally have that.
Share something just from like experience just in one-on-one conversation. I think in at least at an event, what you had mentioned, Jennifer, about the teaching, like having people there who are knowledgeable was really helpful. I think that's an important point to bring out. So there's people there who can answer that question, even if, you know, other people can't. Like sometimes I get not sure how to answer that. But I remember one time I was out for a drink with a friend, and three people sat down across from us and started talking to us, and they were actually all pharmacy students. And one of them was stationed at the VA, and another was stationed at, like, a Walgreens or something. And they both talked about that, about the problem of Medicaid and how they saw a lot of their patients, what they thought were abusing pills or coming through and taking it and, like, popping, like, five pills as soon as they came through the line, and they're like, that's what subsidized medicine does. People take advantage of the system. And so I was just talking to them about those experiences, and I kind of tried to go the compassionate role, like Jennifer was mentioning, like, well, what about those people who really do need it? And, you know, they said, yeah, we see those too. Like, we see the lady who comes and has to choose between, you know, buying her milk for that week or fulfilling her prescription. And like, I guess for her that she needs help. And then for the girl who is working at the VA, I always try and talk about that because I think most people believe that veterans deserve their Medicare to be covered. And like that's a perfect example of single-payer insurance in the United States that's working really, really well. And so I asked her about her experience there and the kind of quality. You know, I didn't preach to her at first. I just was asking her what she saw there and if she felt like they were being taken care of and the quality of their care compared to the care she gets through insurance. And she said, oh, no, like it's way – what they get there is way better. And so then I talked to them a little bit about single payer. And the other – you know, some people are just going to be stubborn about it and still argue with you, but that's something I try to bring up are things in our system that are working really well, like veteran care.
This is David. I'm in Chicago. The issue of people who complain about having to pay for people who abuse the system is what's known as the free rider problem, and we're really sensitive to it here. And if everyone is part of the same system, you don't have free riders. So I think and I don't know who said it, but I think the person who was saying that she didn't think that it was such a problem in systems in countries where they have universal health care is right on the mark. You do away with that free rider problem. People don't have to worry if everybody's buying into the same system. But it requires some social solidarity that I think we're lacking here. And that's an underlying problem that I think is causing us to have problems making headway on single payer.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, David.
And this is Francesca again. Just to add quickly to that, something that I've also found in my personal experience to respond to this issue, another way to talk about it is
you know, saying how we're already paying for healthcare. I think, you know, people think of this abuse of the system, like so many of you have also shared, as, you know, these people taking advantage of it, costing the rest of us more money. But I try and use that as an opportunity to talk about, well, where is your money already going in terms of healthcare, and between co-pays and deductibles and premiums. And, I mean, there's just so much money that is already being paid into it, and those costs would be significantly lowered for everyone under a single-payer system. So, like, if people are sort of coming from this very individualist perspective of, I don't want to pay into something that someone is going to abuse, I think one way to get the conversation started is by saying, well, you're already paying for it, so wouldn't you rather have that money, you know, go towards a better system that was providing better care? And I think that's a good way of beginning to talk about the other issues.
One other financial thing I've heard some people say is, you know, make the argument that, you know, if these people, if we don't care for everyone, you know, as the best we can as they begin to get sick, then when they're really, or even before, like preventative care, then when they get really, really sick, then it's really expensive and we're going to have to pay it out, or we are paying it already, or it drives up the cost of healthcare through the emergency room.
I wanted to say, can you hear me? Am I on?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. My name is Pam, and I'm from New York, and I wanted to say that the reason that single payer is not getting more publicity is because it just doesn't get any airtime. Every time it really comes up and it starts to get a little steam, the insurance companies and the pharmaceutical firms get it out of there. You know, they divert the information so that enough people aren't talking about it.
Yeah, I think that's true, Pam. I think that, which is why I think these, you know, actions that Jennifer and Kimberly are talking about, these speak outs and teach-ins, are a really good way of getting past that, because, you know, we don't have as much money as them. We can't buy TV ads, but we can talk to the people in our communities about this. So I think that these actions, these tactics, are a good way of getting through that, you know.
And
do you have kind of like this packet, you know, to help people? Mm-hmm. Or I would hold something in my house, for example. I don't know how many people would come, but I'd advertise, hold something in my house.
I can.
Well,
did you want to go, Francesca?
Sorry, I was just going to say that I created a handout, you know, like a two-sided sheet of paper that takes all of the main points that Kimberly and Jennifer discussed from our past conversations as we were preparing the agenda. So I do have a handout that I made, but I know that, and I would love to turn this to you, Jennifer, because that handout will be sent out with the link to the recording on Friday, but I know this is something that you're working on as well. So please go on.
Yeah, I see that we're all really developed activists with this one thing that stops us, especially here in Oregon, and that is people are like, yeah, house parties, educational events, and then it's like, where do you start? And, you know, there are lots of websites that have house party packets, and this is how you throw a house party, but it's not anything tangible. So our group with Jobs with Justice and some people with Occupy who have come to help team up have decided that we're going to put together a tangible physical packet in like a Flexifile folder. In it so far, it's almost starting backwards, are the index cards for comments. There's going to be a little envelope with a way to fundraise or to put money towards your group and information how to do it in an envelope with a stamp if you want to, like 10 of them. And then on one sheet, there's going to be it's already started. I started a Dropbox, and I'm hoping that it'll be done in about a month. And in that Dropbox also includes a game called Healthcare Jeopardy that you can put on your computer, and if you have a projector, you can project it. I personally think it's a better developing tool for like a speaker's training. So I'm trying to work on a trivia. I don't know if you guys have gone to a trivia night, but I think those are very effective. The other thing, and it's fun and social and you learn. And the other item that our committee is working on, the storytelling committee, is working on almost like a playwright, like a narrative, so that in the beginning of a house party, each guest can pick a name and then play the part, and it'll be a conversation just like that question that Francesca had was, what about those freeloaders, you know? And then it'll have a dialogue that we've constructed together from the information of facts and also the compassion standpoint. So that way people are verbalizing it themselves, hearing it, and then it's a packet that they can keep themselves and share. And, of course, if you're interested in working on things like this as well, feel free to, you know, make those up. I think these will be very useful tools and make it a part of the packet. The other part of the packet are some DVDs. So we've gathered DVDs from the Mattatel Doctors, which are basically an hour long, and some of them are broken up into, like, 10-minute segments, kind of just different styles and different places or part of their tour. So that way at the house party or the teach-in, you can show it. And these have also been used at some of the Healthcare Now conferences and some of the Mattatel Doctors. And they're much more effective, and some of them have charts in them. They're much more effective than PowerPoint presentations. So that kit is definitely being created, and we would love when that's ready to share that with other people. Part of it is going to be just a list of when you donate, this is how your money helps the movement, and then on the other side are things you can do on your own time, you know, as a volunteer. And that's even as little as, do you know someone that owns a restaurant that would want to sponsor a fundraising event that's raising money for your single-payer campaign? You know, I mean, things that you might not have thought about that in 2 months someone might go, oh, my gosh, my friend owns this coffee shop. She's totally for universal health care. You know, so that's kind of what we're working on. And then as far as a teach-in kind of kit is, I really want to road trip to Boise and have all of this stuff with me and be prepared myself and be prepared to meet with a PNHP member so that we can basically more so do a Q&A where I can have my 10 talking points, I can write them down, I can use slides, I can try to just do it on my own, and then we can just simply have a question and answer time, because there are just still so many questions and so many people that don't know about single payer. So it's a matter of setting it up. But I would definitely like to be able to bring those tools with me for people who aren't getting them or don't even know that they're out there. So as activists, it's kind of up to us to create those packets so that it's easier for people to have a house party. And when you drop that, you know, that thing off that has all that gear in it, and it's a friend of yours, you don't even really have to have a PNHP member or someone. The healthcare movie is a very good sharing tool that really brings about Canada and then personal activism there in Canada and what it was like in the 50s to try to bring about Medicare. And when I've showed it to friends, we've just, like, talked about healthcare. We didn't even really, if people had some questions, I usually was able to answer them. But sometimes you don't even need to have someone there to answer the hard questions. You can figure them out later, or you can Google them right there. Just about opening up dialogue. So
I'm really excited about those ideas, Jennifer. I'm just, like, thinking of, yeah, when that gets ready, ways, like, we'll definitely want to get a packet. I love the idea of making it fun and making it interactive. Because I think a lot about what keeps people involved, and I think people stay involved when they feel like they really have authentic friendships with people in the organization, and I feel that friendships are developed by having fun, you know, not by sitting and listening to a lecture, but by laughing and like having that Jeopardy game and having that dialogue where you act like someone you would never be. That's, like, it's really a fun way to approach it.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted to say one thing about Pam's question or comment about how single payer doesn't get any airtime, and I think that's the importance of doing these events sometimes in a public location versus a house party, because single payer is not something that's talked about a lot, and because of that, at least in my experience, when we talk to media people, they do kind of say, huh, what's that, even out of, like, personal interest, like, what is that exactly? And if you can create a story for them to publish in the paper, a lot of times they will. And so that creates, it gets some airtime if you make it a story that people want to share. And with our event, we had, it was in the newspaper as an article and also as a photo album. And also we had an op-ed. And then we also had about like a two-minute interview on the local NPR station. And the TV came out too. I don't think the TV ran the clip. But we had success in media coming out, so that's one way to get airtime. And one other kind of media hook, and just to get people to come to the event that I forgot to mention, is that when we asked speakers to speak ahead of time, we also tried to ask people from different sectors of the healthcare system. Like we asked, you know, made sure we had a doctor and a nurse and someone who had insurance, someone who didn't. And we also tried to bring – we weren't successful, but I think next time we will be. They were just busy that day, but we tried to have a small business owner, like a local business owner, talk about how, like, the expensive insurance is, you know, it's so difficult for them to give their employees what they deserve and still keep the business open.
That's great. That's really great. I have something to add to the media thing as well that kind of occurred to me when I was going over Kimberly's notes about having people go research the questions that they had if someone else wasn't able to ask them. I think that's a very powerful thing to do, because once we start writing our opinions and our thoughts, we really formulate our ideas, and if we encourage our activist friends to do that as well, it makes them better speakers. Last week I read an article, I don't know if you guys have the DJCs, the Daily Journals of Commerce, in your town, but most towns have these, and you all have periodicals and magazines and newspapers. There's someone that writes from a pretty liberal standpoint, and he writes on stocks and money, and someone just wrote, should I invest in pharmaceuticals? That's the way I think I'm going to go. And he was like, heck yeah, invest in pharmaceuticals. So I'm working on a question to ask him, because he's an editorial page. You write a question, and he answers it. I'm just going to ask him what he thinks about universal health care and small businesses and money, and if it's beneficial to have a country with universal health care and open up a small business. And all the articles that I've read says yes, yes, yes. So I'm going to challenge a writer that's job is to answer the public's questions. And if you have a local newspaper that has one of those, that someone that's answering financial questions, go ahead and let's come up with some really good questions and maybe send some of those articles. Like, hey, I read this. It says that countries with universal health care have higher rates of entrepreneurship. You know, so there's an idea of putting it into the media. And then along with the trivia, if there's anyone interested in working on this, you've mentioned NPR. There's a show that comes on Friday nights called Livewire, and they always do trivia. On Saturday, they do trivias. If we get this trivia set up, there are things and facts that my neighbors don't even know, that my friends don't even know, and I've known them for a year, and they know I'm for universal healthcare, and they still don't know the facts about our healthcare system. That'll be a great media tool, especially if you take it to, like, a local pub and start feeding in those trivia questions. And maybe putting them in, like, your weekly newspaper that might be a little on the left side, doing a trivia and asking them to host a trivia day, and people submit and can maybe win a prize. People will be really shocked about the truth in our healthcare, and I think that's a really good media tool.
Thanks for those ideas. Any other questions?
Susan, this is Pam again. I just wanted to say thank you very much for all the answers that you gave, because there are a lot of good suggestions, especially taking it out of the house and bringing it to a local business or meeting place. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I have a question. This is Peg. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, this is Peg Nosek in Houston. A lot of the suggestions have been aiming, I think, toward a little bit higher caliber audience than you would find in a club or a bar in Texas. I'm sorry. But, I mean, trivia questions, I don't think we'd go over here. I mean, I guess my question is, what level audience are you trying to attract? It sounds to me like you're trying to attract a fairly well-educated audience, right?
No, I'm trying to, personally, I'm trying to point out that we're not well-educated. That's my take on that. Oregon, yes, is very liberal compared to Texas, so I'm going to have an easier time, and we're much more receptive to this kind of the kind of tools that I'm talking about. Texas might be very difficult. Like, people are like, why should we go talk about healthcare? Messaging for a teaching in Texas might be completely different than the way I'd message in Portland. It might be financial. That's a great thing to bring up.
I mean, when we're talking to a Latino audience or trying to link up with a group of people who are mostly immigrants, because that's what Houston mostly is, you know, we're talking about their children and, you know, getting care for their children, and that's what seems to spark interest, is that they're mostly frustrated. They're willing to go without health care for themselves, but when you talk about their children, that's when they get fired up.
You know, Peg, one thing that we are trying to do in Gainesville, and we don't know if it's going to work yet because we're just developing it, but we are conscious of that, and that, like I was when I first came into the organization, I asked, like, what's the membership made up of, especially since we're in a university town. And there are immigrants in Gainesville, and there are young people, and there are older people, and there are families. But a lot of, the majority of people in our organization are middle class, well-educated, white seniors. And so I thought about that. Like, we really need to expand this. And we do have a few members who have connections and who are minorities themselves and are involved in other groups in the community. And they started saying, you know, healthcare is really important to our communities, and they need to know about this, and that people are here at the local level are talking about the problems and thinking about envisioning solutions. And some of them have had, these two people I'm thinking of in particular, had experience in the civil rights movement with things that worked. And one of them shared that one thing that really helped them connect, you know, with people who, you know, were struggling just to make their ends meet every day and, you know, were worried about things like healthcare for their kids, was having some sort of a service you could offer, or a way to actually meet a need, like a physical need, because those are the most important things. And so what we're putting together is a comprehensive list of all of the free or very reduced healthcare services that are offered in our community, all the way from what's available for children up to seniors, and everything from checkups to emergency care to dental. And we're hoping that, you know, having all that information, like, I'm excited because I don't have insurance, so that will be a really useful tool for me. But I hope that that's something that might pique the interest of a different group of people connected with. But I don't know. I'll have to tell you about that next year, how it worked.
That's great. Thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, I think to that in our group, I give us like another 4 months to really learn about healthcare and advocate it appropriately so that we can message differently in different communities. And one of those things is to start our teach-ins and our workshops on healthcare being discussed as a human right, so that we start learning about human rights values, so that we're using that in our messaging, so that we're remembering to include everybody in our conversation just by, you know, verbalizing it as a right, and something that is that's socially responsible that we should be doing.
Any other questions or comments? Francesca, were there any more on your list that, that people emailed in?
No, I'm going to check again really quick, but I think that I think everything was addressed in terms of the questions that were emailed to me.
Great.
No, I was just going to say, it seems like this might be a good place then to stop. But I just wanted to first say before you close us out, Kimberly, that if after this call, if people who are, you know, participating have questions or think of things that they would want to discuss, please feel free to email me at the office and I will get back to you and, you know, we can continue this conversation off of this call. This isn't the end of it. I think there was a lot of amazing information that was passed. And so just the email, you can send it to info@healthcare-now.org. And others of you have my personal email address, but my name is harder to spell. So, but if you have francesca@healthcare-now.org, also either of those email addresses is fine.
Thanks. Any other last-minute questions before we close out the call?
Great ideas. This is Dev. I will try to get this with when you send it, you know, in a written form. I will definitely pass it on to organizers in Single Payer New York. Great ideas.
Thanks. And I'm excited for when the group that Jennifer is working with has their tool ready to go. It sounds really powerful and fun and strategic. Great. Well, I want to thank
that one. That would be a great topic for another call, is how to do a tour.
How to do a what was that?
A tour,
A tour?
Yeah.
What do you mean by a tour exactly?
Is that what you just said?
Oh, sorry. I was trying to say the word tool.
Oh, tool. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Like they're putting that packet together about different...
Oh, okay.
Ways to have a house party or a public event.
Oh, okay. But also I'm interested in tours. I mean, like, you know, going on a road trip and making 3 or 4 stops.
That would be fun. I love road trips.
Yeah,
now,
but
that
how?
That would be a media story, really unique, too. It's a good idea.
Uh-huh. How to get necessary ingredients together to do that would be very interesting to hear.
Yeah.
That's a great idea, Peg, actually. I wrote that down in terms of for a future call. And I didn't mean to cut you off, Kimberly, but I just wanted to add that. I'm really glad that you mentioned that because I also want to encourage people who have ideas for useful, for further skills and ideas that they want to learn and build on to please also email or call me and Jeff at the office with those ideas for future skill-building calls. Because that's the whole point of this is that I want it driven by what our membership and our supporters need. So thank you for throwing it out there. I'm definitely putting it on the list for one of the upcoming ones.
Yeah, that's really cool. I've never heard of anyone doing that around healthcare, but people have, you know, do similar or have done tours around other topics. I work some with immigration here in Florida, and people a lot of times go on marches or bike rides through a few multiple cities to talk about the issues they're facing. And the media usually is really open to publishing stories about that, and people are interested and come out to the event, so it definitely creates, and it builds allies in those other cities, too.
Have you heard of the Libro Traficante? Libro Traficante. You've heard of narco traficantes, right?
I haven't personally, but maybe I probably should have.
Well, they're notorious. It's all the thugs from Mexico who are selling selling drugs. Mm. Well, now that Arizona has outlawed books about Mexican history, we've got tours starting here in Houston that are literally taking road trips over spring break to bring books to Arizona.
Oh, and I heard about that on the radio. That's really cool.
Right. They're called Libro Traficantes. So,
okay. Thank
we're
you.
We're trying to team up with them to do our May Day rallies.
I was at a conference in Albany, New York today. It was part of the Labor Religion Coalition, and they teamed up with the Immigrant Coalition. So at that point, they were really most interested in education, because in New York State, we don't have a DREAM Act. I think you have one in Texas. But they would definitely, I could see for future reference, be a population that needs to be made aware of the need for health care.
Definitely.
So, I mean, there's just so many different avenues that we can pursue. And I'm tired. I fasted for 40 hours. I ate already, but it was a strain. And somebody keyed my car in the city.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay. But this was really great, guys. Absolutely great.
Yeah, thank you.
Great. Well, I think since it's a few minutes to 10, we'll go ahead and wrap it up. And so I wanted to thank Francesca with Healthcare Now for inviting Jennifer and I to be on the call. And Jennifer Blackburn, again, is from Jobs with Justice and Occupy Portland in Oregon. And I'm Kim Hunter with the Alachua County Labor Party in Gainesville, Florida. So
thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks to all of you who called in and for your time and your ideas and great questions. And look for that email from Francesca on Friday with the recording of the call and the notes and materials compiled from our points that we went through. All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Thanks, guys. Is anyone still there?
Kimberly's here.
Okay.
I think maybe Francesca probably hung up.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of figured everyone would, but okay. I figured everyone's out, and that was really great, Kimberly. And these notes here are so neat. Sometimes I don't have time to get to go look at these websites because I know that people place notes and information to hold things, but this was really helpful for me, just organizing it and seeing you organize it. It's kind of made me better at what I'm doing. So,
yeah, it was really great to hear your ideas too, especially about the different committees. And I love the storytelling committee, and all of those ideas of really making it fun and like kind of making a memory while you're learning about it. So it's great.
Yeah, this is something definitely people will not forget. It's turned into almost full-time after-work jobs for people.
Wow.
It's a lifestyle, isn't it? I mean, are you in a full-time position with the Shula Labor Party? Or?
It's a part-time, but they're fundraising to be able to have a full-time staffer, so it's good.
Yeah.
I do other things on the side to make ends meet, mostly tutoring and things like that. But it's probably it is a full-time job, but it's part-time pay. But it's really meaningful work, so.
Right. All right. Great. Well, I hope the fundraising goes well. We're fundraising over here as well, and it's tough. Just trying to figure out how do you get and who do you get and how is it appropriate to ask for money. I'm still learning that. As being kind of new to the movement, I'm to the point where I feel like I can ask for people to donate, which I didn't feel as comfortable with 5 months ago. It's still probably the smallest committee out of all of our committees, you know. So, well, thank you, and I look forward to our next conversations. When's your next speak out planned or with Occupy?
We don't have another one planned currently. Kind of right now, I didn't go into it in the call, but it all started with that speak out, but we've developed some really specific goals for 2012, and the one I think that directly branches from the speak out is we have a goal of partnering with 10 organizations by the end of the year, two in five different categories, union, faith, student, senior, and minority groups. So we're kind of focused on that. It's how our committees are kind of divided up according to their, or have divided themselves according to their connections in the community, and are brainstorming ways to connect with them. And I guess our next thing on the calendar is we have what used to be a community college and is now a college in town, but it's really a place where a lot of local working class people go to school and earn their degrees while they're working. And we have some members who teach there, and also one who's a student, and they're organizing a public forum on healthcare there. So, in an effort to partner with some student groups, that's kind of exciting.
Yeah, that's good. Students are really into it. And they have time. Our student group, we had a lot of students at the teach-in.
We typically don't. Ours is definitely an older crowd, and we're really trying to reach some younger folks. So. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Can I ask you how large is Occupy in Gainesville?
When it first started, it was maybe 75 to 100, but that was only for a couple of weeks. Maybe 2 months, about that much, depending on what time you went down there. And now I think it's down to about, there's probably 25 or so core people involved, but when you go down on the plaza, there's not usually that many. Usually it's maybe like 10 people or so taking
turns. Are people still camping?
I don't think so. They still have a tent. The tent is there pretty much 24/7, and they always have someone stationed at the tent. But I don't think people are sleeping there anymore.
Okay. Do you find that Occupy is dismantling at all, or do you feel like they're just getting ready for May 1st or participating? Or,
you know, I haven't been to a meeting in a while, and I haven't checked their website in a week or two, so I'm not sure what they're planning right now. It's kind of, it's just so much because that's just, I have to focus on organizing things here, and that partnership didn't really continue in like a regular or systematic way, so it just kind of ebbs and flows.
Right. Well, I have to say that you gave it enough effort because it's been tough. Like, I thought that it would be beneficial to actually start an Occupy Portland Healthcare Committee, and it is so much work that it's kind of like I can't get these other things done that I think are actually kind of more important. I mean, not more important, but are going to be more effective. So you're doing fine, kind of saying, letting the occupiers kind of do their thing and then messaging when it's time, because it was almost too much work that you can't hold up three different committees or three.
Right, exactly.
Kind of focus on your, or you're going to spread yourself too thin. But definitely, I think we've just developed relationships, and, you know, whatever happens with Occupy, I don't see it going anywhere. Like, our working groups are very solid, and friendships are being formed and are created. Mm-hmm. And so now for future events, on lobby day, it won't be 130 people, it'll be 500 people.
Right.
So I think that's really it with Occupy, and it's a challenge.
Definitely.
But they have open ears, that's for sure, for these
kinds
of events. Well, thanks so much. Thanks for facilitating, and we'll be in touch.
Sounds good. All right, good night, Jennifer.
Okay.